This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 150 years ago today, a collection of essays arrived on the bookstores of New England. Walden, or Life in the Woods, by Henry David Thoreau, went on to become a classic of American literature and a mirror to the American soul. It's shaped our thinking on nature and conservation, politics, and literature. Within a couple of years of its publication, the source of Thoreau's inspiration, the site of his solitude, became a site of pilgrimage. Nestled in the woods, Walden Pond is in Concord, Massachusetts, about 15 miles outside of Boston. But many of those who arrive at Walden today, battered paperback in hand, visions of transcendental wilderness in their heads, are sometimes surprised by what they find. Richard Smith is an historical interpreter of Thoreau at the Concord Museum. He joins us now from the author's old house site on the edge of Walden Pond. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. So what's the scene like there this afternoon?
Well, I'm sitting on the northwest side of the pond, not too far from where Thoreau had his house, and the sun is out. It's a little bit cool for New England in August, but there's a nice breeze. The pond is blue and green, and there's a little bit of a ripple because of the breeze that's blowing across the pond right now.
Most of us hear the word pond, and we think of something, maybe 20 yards across. Walden Pond is more of a small lake.
Exactly. It's about a half a mile long, and all the way around it's about a mile and three quarters.
And our memory of it is formed by, I guess, our imaginations of what it looked like in Henry David Thoreau's day. What does it look like now?
Well, right now there are people swimming. There's a bunch of kayakers. There are a couple of mallard ducks down below. I see that. But there are some people just kind of hiking the trails. There's probably more people here now than there would have been in Thoreau's day. But there's also more trees than when he was living here as well.
Now, it was a woodlot in those days. A lot of people still use firewood to heat their houses in winter.
Exactly. In fact, the land that Thoreau was living on was Emerson's woodlot.
Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Exactly.
The Emerson.
The Emerson.
How much of that of the pond, and this is now a state park, isn't it?
It is. It's a state reservation, actually.
And how much of it is devoted to recreation, beaches and that sort of thing, and how much is devoted to the memory of the great transcendentalist?
Well, I mean, it's primarily a recreation area. A lot of people come up from Boston, and I would be surprised if most of them were not aware or didn't know that Thoreau actually lived here. For them, it's a place to come boating and swimming and sun tanning.
So you get hundreds of thousands of people a year.
Yeah, I mean, it gets very crowded, although I would say that there is a goodly amount of people that come here as Thoreau pilgrims. I was just walking by the house site a little bit ago, and there was a woman there. It looked like she was meditating and writing in her journal. I've seen a couple of other people walk by and lay stones on the cairn near his house. So there definitely are Thoreauvian pilgrims coming and going every day.
You mentioned the cairn, a pile of stones near his house. When did that start? What's it for?
That was started in the 1870s by Bronson Alcott, who was a good friend of Thoreau's. And he laid a stone down to kind of mark where Thoreau's house had been, and people have been doing it ever since then.
What does the house site look today other than that pile of stones there?
There are four granite markers outlining the exact site of Thoreau's house, the exact size, which was 10 by 15, and it says site of Thoreau's cabin, 1845 to 1847.
There is a reproduction of what the cabin, or what very well-researched reproduction of what the cabin may have looked like, but it's up near the parking lot, right?
You're exactly right. The house replica is up by the parking lot, and it's got the furniture, replicas of the furniture, as well as the stove and some of the other things that Thoreau had when he was living here.
He wrote a lot about the intrusion of the railroad line that ran on the side of the pond opposite where his house site was. Is that still there? And what of the small road that ran not far from his house site and his bean field?
Well, the small road now is Route 2, so it's not so small anymore. As for the railroad, the same line is still there. It's the Boston to Fitchburg line, and he used to walk those railroad tracks home to his mother and father's house pretty regularly. He would go into Concord every day or two.
Mm-hmm.
But the train just went by about 10 or 15 minutes ago.
And a lot of traffic going by on the other side.
On Route 2, yeah. That's the major artery that leads into Cambridge and eventually Boston.
One of the things that that Thoreau used to write about, he really almost invented the idea of towns across America putting aside places of wilderness for people to remember and remember what America used to be like, even 150 years ago. It's hard to put thoughts in the mind of somebody who died so long ago, but would Thoreau, do you think, have minded if people used Walden Pond for recreation?
No, if you think about it, Thoreau himself was using the pond for recreation. He used to fish here. He boated on the pond quite regularly, and he swam here every day when he was living at the pond. So, and people were doing it when he was here. Hawthorne, the Alcotts, the Emerson family, local farmers, they used to come to Walden all the time for swimming and fishing and boating and camping. So I don't think he would be surprised that about the fact that people are still doing that.
Richard Smith, it's nice to spend a bit of a nice fall afternoon with you.
Well, it's on a day like this, Walden Pond definitely seems like the center of the universe.
Okay, and of course it's summer. Don't write me emails. Thank you. Richard Smith came to us from the banks of Walden Pond outside of Concord, Massachusetts, where he works at the Concord Museum. Thanks very much again.
You're welcome. Thank you.
If you have experiences with Walden, the book, or the place, join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from the Delaware Broadcasting Center in Wilmington, Delaware, is W. Barksdale Maynard, the author of the newly published Walden Pond, A History. And it's good of you to be with us today.
Thanks a lot, Neil.
We've just heard about Walden Pond today. It does sound, Richard Smith said, a lot more people, but a lot more trees as well.
That's right. It's grown up quite a bit. It used to be a really clear-cut area, but now the forests have returned.
And as he said, Walden has always been used in part by fishermen and for some recreation, but I suspect not as heavily as it is now.
That's certainly the case. We've now got as many as 100,000 people coming in the month of July, 700,000 people in a year. That's an immense visitation, and it's somewhat troubling to a lot of us.
In what way?
Well, it's a very small park, and if you compare the visitation per square foot to, let's say, Yellowstone or one of the great national parks, Walden is really getting trampled.
It's nevertheless, it was always fairly accessible. People have said, I quoted somebody in your book, I think, as saying that if Thoreau was a hermit, that's probably not the right word to use, he was a very public hermit.
I think that's right. That's a little known fact about Thoreau. He was not trying to escape from the human race, but rather, I think, put himself on display by the pond so that people could come see him and be provoked by his experiment.
Our number again, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, email totn@npr.org. Gordon is on the line with us from Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, good morning. I'm calling because I have a thought as an Englishman who came to understand the importance of Thoreau rather late on in my life. And I that happened by virtue of my marrying into contact with the late and great Paul Brooks, a conservationist who lives quite close to Walden Pond and cared deeply about it. But what struck me when first I read Walden was the word deliberately in the line, "I went to the woods because I lived deliberately." For folks who, as is increasingly the case, feel as though life is somehow something which is happening to them, which is a modern phenomenon, the notion that life is something that one pays some attention to and sets about to simplify and front only the essential facts of life struck me as an incredibly timely lesson for us human beings and Americans, and me by adoption, only late an American, to pay some heed to.
Barksdale Maynard, Thoreau has a lot to say to us today, as well as what he said to people then.
I couldn't agree more with what Gordon said. I think so many people today do sort of drift through life. So much is provided for us in this country with all our opportunities and all our wealth. Thoreau really calls us to examine what it is we're on the earth to do, and calls upon us to question the culture in which we find ourselves immersed.
Gordon, have you been to visit Walden Pond?
Yes, I have. it's not what the romantic eye would have it be, that's for sure. But it's important. It should still be there, I think.
Oh, of course. Gordon, thank you very much.
All right. Goodbye.
In addition to his thoughts about isolation, what we can do without, and his philosophy, Henry David Thoreau you quote biologist Edward O. Wilson, the famous E. O. Wilson, as writing, "An amateur naturalist perched in a toy house on the edge of a ravaged woodlot became the founding saint of the conservation movement."
It's a great quote by the marvelous E. O. Wilson, and it really does point to the sort of bizarre paradox of Thoreau, that he's living there, you know, a little-known person, not a significant person really in any way, and yet from the seed that he plants springs the entire modern conservation movement.
Our next caller is Michael. Michael's with us from Kansas City.
Hi there. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
I grew up in Concord, and lived there in my early years, and my father was chairman of the Recreation Commission in the 50s that established Walden Pond as a recreation area.
Oh, is that right? Great.
And in memory of that, we have editorials inveighing against my father's activities from London to the Delhi Times because
wow.
We were sacking the memory of Henry David Thoreau.
What were his activities that people were concerned about?
They put in a dock.
Okay.
And that was following the drownings of two or three young people from Concord, Massachusetts, and the Recreation Commission decided a mile or so away from the cairn to put in a dock. And India, of course, has some long connection to Henry David Thoreau through the nonviolence movement and so forth, and that was made clear that this was really desecrating the memory of Thoreau.
A lot of people, I think, are familiar with the conservation battles around Walden Pond in the 1980s, but actually they were equally hot in the 1950s, and this dock business, right, and that was a messy, messy period, really prior to the emergence of the modern historic preservation movement. Walden became a very important test case.
We received quite a bit of hate mail at home, I recall doing. But they were faced with the idea of trying. People were swimming there, and the idea was to make it a little bit safer than it was during Emerson and Thoreau and Hawthorne's time. So
right.
It was kind of an interesting time to be present during the creation of some history.
And this is a constant give and take at Walden between keeping people safe, keeping people entertained, providing for recreation needs, and at the same time, how do we keep Walden this sort of sacred primeval place that we all have in our imaginations?
But am I wrong? Back in the 50s, wasn't there an amusement park not that far away?
I think that was probably the least of the problems. There were Pizza Huts and all sorts, not Pizza Huts, but pizza shops and all sorts of things around there. At the time, the commercialization was really quite extraordinary, and I think it's somewhat better than it was, but an L dock for swimming from was the least of the problems, I think.
Well, Michael, thanks very much for the phone call.
Nice to speak with you.
We're celebrating the 150th anniversary of the publication of Thoreau's Walden Pond. Are there specific ways in which reading Walden has shaped your thinking or your life? If so, give us a phone call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email. The address is totn@npr.org. We're speaking with W. Barksdale Maynard. He's the author of the newly published Walden Pond, A History. When we come back from a short break, we'll be joined by Terry Tempest Williams to talk about Thoreau's inspiration as a nature writer and as a political thinker. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about Walden, both the literary and political ideas, and the pond itself in Massachusetts. If the last time you encountered Henry David Thoreau was under the duress of a freshman English class, here's a quick refresher. The book starts off with these lines. "When I wrote the following pages, or rather the bulk of them, I lived alone in the woods, a mile from any neighbor, in a house which I had built myself on the shore of Walden Pond in Concord, Massachusetts, and earn my living by the labor of my hands only. I lived there 2 years and 2 months. At present, I am a sojourner in civilized life again. Walden, or Life in the Woods, is the account of those 2 years on a small woodlot at the edge of Walden Pond in Concord, Massachusetts. Over the course of hundreds of pages, Thoreau meditates on the natural wonders of his self-imposed exile. In doing so, he presents the philosophical argument for a life of voluntary simplicity, trying to escape not so much from mankind as from the entanglements of society. If you do remember that English class, what were your impressions upon the discovery of Walden? Have the ideas of the book helped shape your life in some way? You're invited to join us, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org. Our guest coming to us from Wilmington, Delaware, is W. Barksdale Maynard, author of the new book, Walden Pond, A History. And let's take a phone call. This is Judy, who's with us on the line from Syracuse, New York.
Hello.
Hi.
I just have a silly little story, which has always been fun for me. There's a whole paragraph in Walden criticizing my great-great-great-grandfather. I don't know how many greats it was. Apparently, Thoreau had asked my ancestor to be on his pond first.
And your ancestor's name was?
Well, Flint. F-L-I-N-T. And my grandfather turned Thoreau down, and therefore he went to Walden instead of to Flint Pond.
You write about that, Barksdale Maynard.
That's right. In fact, Thoreau calls him a skinflint.
Yes.
In Walden for that. So you're right. He's been immortalized by no less than Thoreau.
Our crack staff has pulled the quote out for me. Flint's Pond, such is the poverty of our nomenclature. What right had the unclean and stupid farmer whose farm abutted on this skywater, whose shores he has ruthlessly laid bare to give his name to it? I go there not to see him, nor to hear of him who never saw it, nor never bathed in it, who never loved it, who never protected it, who never spoke a good word for it, nor thank God that he had made it. Rather, let it be named for the fishes that swim in it, and he goes on. Immortal, but an immortal pan.
Yes.
What I want to say is that the pond was Sandy Pond for a long time after that instead of Flint Pond, but the descendants of that man have put more energy and commitment into conservation than Thoreau could have imagined. So he was wrong.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that. That's positive.
Thanks very much, Judy.
Okay, bye.
Thoreau stands at the head of a long line of writers who have charged themselves with the task of making meaning of America's wilderness. Author Terry Tempest Williams is one of them. She also wrote the introduction to a new edition of Walden from Shambhala Press, and she joins us now from a cabin on the coast of Maine. And welcome to the program.
Thank you, Neil. What a great program. It's fascinating to hear this history.
What role did Thoreau hold for you in your development as a writer?
Thoreau's had an enormous influence on me and continues to. You know, I was remembering the first time I read Walden. I was a junior in high school. I still have that copy underlined in green. And, you know, I read it then as a book about nature, fierce observations in nature. And I think I realized, like Emerson said, the best place for each of us is where we stand. And I think he made me look in my own home ground in Utah and believe that that had meaning just as Walden had meaning for him.
Now, one of the things that he wrote a lot about was the woods around his house being ravaged by the woodcutters. They're there to take, trees down for the sleepers for the railroad that was being built nearby. The issues in nature, I guess, have changed a lot since Thoreau's days. In some ways, though, I guess they're the same.
I think that's the remarkable thing about Walden, is that it's relevant for each time that it is read in. It's a prophetic book. It's a book of revelations. And I think it meets us intellectually wherever we are. And, you know, reading it now, I really see Walden as a spiritual and political manifesto, from the sentence, "In wildness is the preservation of the world," to his line, "We need the tonic of wildness."
I think it was during his time at Walden that Thoreau went into town and was notified that he had not paid his taxes, the poll tax that had been imposed and which he had refused to pay. Basically, was opposition to slavery and the then pending, I guess, Mexican War. He was thrown into jail for a night.
That's right. And, you know, I think what comes through is that Thoreau was not only a great naturalist, but he really was a very astute political thinker. And whether it's Walden or whether it's his essay, Civil Disobedience, I think he asks us to live a more deliberate, conscious life. You know, America during that time was searching for its soul. It was right between the Revolutionary War and the Civil War. And I think it was a time of an erosion of faith. And just having reread Walden, it comes to bear that these thoughts have never been more necessary. I was thinking of that line, cast your whole vote, not a strip of paper merely, but your whole influence. And never has that meant more than I think it does now.
Barksdale Maynard, you wrote in your book that Walden may be the most reproduced book by an American author anywhere in the world.
That's right. It seems to have this universal appeal. The Thoreau Society meets every summer in Concord. This summer we had people literally from all over the world, Japan, Sweden, Italy, just the wide range of interest all over the planet in Thoreau is really extraordinary to see.
Terry Tempest Williams, you have an upcoming book, I know, The Open Space of Democracy, a series of essays and lectures that you gave after September the 11th. You also mentioned you just reread Thoreau. Did one have anything to do with the other?
Absolutely. I think Thoreau reminds us now that we're in need of a reflective activism born out of humility, not arrogance. And I think through Walden we see that reflection, with deep time spent in the consideration of others, opens the door to becoming a compassionate participant in the world. Neil, listen to this. This is from the last chapter in Walden, the conclusion. He writes, "To those men who love the soil, which makes their graves, but have no sympathy with the spirit, which may still animate their clay, patriotism is a maggot in their heads." Don't you love that?
Let's take a listener. This is, am I pronouncing this correctly?
Oness.
Okay, thank you for helping me out there.
I really appreciate your show, and I like what Terry said. I'm a Native American cultural historian, and I worked a number of years for Massachusetts Forest and Parks Region 2 doing cultural history of Native American.
I hear a bit of the accent.
And what I need to let people know, and also your guests, is that one of my ancestors, a Penobscot Indian, was Mr. Polis, P-O-L-L-I-S, from Indian Island, Old Town, Maine. It was Mr. Polis that actually was the so-called guide, as you folks say in English, that took Mr. Thoreau around, not only Walden, but in our Wabanaki territory, now called the state of Maine. And that many things that Mr. Thoreau wrote really is Native or American Indian indigenous knowledge, wisdom, philosophy, but hardly any nature writers, environmental educators ever acknowledge that this wisdom is not from Euro-America, but is from North America. We say Tunapasagmano in the Penobscot language, Turtle Island, and that Mr. Polis was really the spiritual guide and educator to Thoreau. And I hope people are aware of that, and I'm wondering if Mr. Maynard or Ms. Williams is aware of that.
Mr. Maynard?
Well, I think that Thoreau was one of the very first Americans to take seriously the Native Americans and their intellectual traditions. He finds a lot of affinities between them and the ancient Greeks, who he was so enamored of. I think we're going to have a better sense of all of this with the forthcoming publication of Thoreau's Indian Notebooks by the scholar Brad Dean. That's coming fairly soon, and we're looking forward to that.
Well, I just hope, again, that the knowledge of Native peoples from each land that we live is appreciated, and that American nature writers honor that that's where a lot of the wisdom comes from.
I think Terry Tempest Williams would agree with that.
Very much so, and thank you so much for bringing that insight to this discussion.
Thank you for helping with me with the pronunciation, Juanes.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate the phone call. And speaking of pronunciation, an email from Catherine. I'm listening to the show, and I'm hearing Thoreau's name being pronounced two different ways. One is Thoreau, and the other is Thoreau. Which is it? Does anyone really know? And help me out with this. I'm just trying to get it right. Barksdale Maynard?
I'm mispronouncing it. I freely confess. It's not pronounced Thoreau. But most of us say it that way, and it's very hard to get it right. It is Thoreau. And we know that because Hawthorne, when he first meets Thoreau, goes home and writes in his journal that he's met the strangest guy he's ever met, and he spells it phonetically, Thoreau. So it clearly was Thoreau, but most of us mispronounce it.
Thank you for that clarification. And Terry Tempest Williams, I wanted to thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much, Neil.
Terry Tempest Williams, an author and environmentalist. Her upcoming book is The Open Space of Democracy. She joined us from her cabin near Surrey, Maine. And let's get another caller on the line. Kathy is with us from Chaseburg, Wisconsin.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you very much. I love this show.
Thank you.
And I love Walden, and I read it when I was about 19 or so, and as I told the screener, I sort of caught it like a virus, kind of like malaria. It never goes away. Every day something happens that reminds me of some little part of Walden, and right now I'm in my bathroom of the house I've been building myself for several years, actually. So that part of it I absorbed. And I can't say that I live my life by Walden, but it's sort of like I have a companion so that if something stupid happens, I can find a line in Walden, and it's like having a conversation with Thoreau. And I just wanted to call and say that. Thanks.
Thank you for the call, Kathy. Here's an email question from Al Auger in Redding, California. Hopefully your guest can clear up a story I've heard for years. Although Thoreau, as we've all learned to say, lived at Walden Pond, he went home each night to have dinner with his mother.
I'm glad that this has come up. It always does. Thoreau has this reputation as a horrible hypocrite who pretends to be living in the woods, but in fact he sneaks into town. And the story has evolved over the years from having his mother do his laundry and bake him pies to actually stealing pies from people's windowsills on his way back to the pond, none of which is necessarily true. But it does point to the fact that he's living only 30 minutes walk from the town that he grew up in. He never severs ties with the community of Concord. He does go back to town, and it's not hypocrisy. He's not a hermit in the woods. He's not a hermit. He's undertaking a philosophical experiment, but he maintains close connections to his family and to his friends.
Let's talk now with Brian, who's on the line from Rockford, Illinois.
Hi.
Hi.
That's pretty much a lot of what I wanted to talk about today, was the fact that I wanted to dispel the notion that Thoreau was a hermit living in the woods the whole time, and point out how great the book is just from a literary standpoint. It has a lot of good philosophical ideas, but I really enjoy the fact that, you know, he was living on Emerson's woodlot, and he and Emerson were great friends. They frequently would have dinner when Thoreau would come back to Concord. And Thoreau lived in the woods for 2 years and sort of condensed the events of those 2 years down to create the one-year cycle that the book talks about. And I think that just alone as a literary piece of work, it's amazing.
And wrote seven drafts, Barksdale Maynard, including a lot of stuff that happened after he was no longer living on the pond.
That was one of the surprises to me in doing the research for my own book, is that you're right. The Walden is published 150 years ago today, in August of 1854. He'd been gone from the pond for years, but he continues to go to the pond almost daily. And those later experiences he weaves into the text of Walden, and he pretends, frankly, that all that stuff happened when he was living there.
Do we call that poetic license?
Very much so.
Brian, thanks very much.
Thank you.
We're talking about Walden on the 150th anniversary of its publication. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's talk now with Maggie. Maggie's on the line from Portland, Oregon.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I had a comment. I just have always really loved Walden and have found it so much. It's just very meaty. There's so many things you can get out of it. And I recently taught a Sunday school lesson based on Walden for elementary kids, and they loved it, basically about stewardship, good stewardship. And I had them go out in the parking lot with chalk, and actually we measured out and sketched out his cabin being, you know, 10 by 15, and really talked about what he needed. And actually one of the comments from one of the kids was, well, he used what he needed. He didn't, you know, he didn't use more, which, of course, you know, there's a lot of links to Christianity on that. So it was really fun. We had a really good time with that and introduced a lot of young kids who obviously are too young to be reading the book yet. But I figured it can't hurt to get the name out there.
Go ahead.
There's been a lot of debate over the years as to what's the optimal age to reach people with the message of Walden. And in recent years, there's been a lot of effort to interest elementary school kids. Other people say no, even high school is too soon to be exposed to this extraordinarily complex and in many ways very difficult book. So it does reach people on a lot of different levels.
Yes, yes. Well, like I said, I really think that it touched a couple of the kids quite a lot. It really, they talked about it for quite a lot of time afterwards.
That's great.
It's great, yeah.
Maggie, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's talk now with Dorothy in White Bear Lake, Minnesota.
Yes, I just wanted to share my favorite quote from E.B. White, who wrote a foreword to an edition of Walden I read about 10 years ago. Thoreau was on his deathbed, really, his mother and his aunt were trying to convince him to see the preacher to make his peace with God. And, of course, he never had much time for organized religion, although he dabbled in transcendentalism for a while. But he refused, and his words were, "I wasn't aware that there had been a quarrel."
That's right.
So
he was a funny writer, one of our funniest, actually. Seems so serious a lot of the times, but then he slips in extraordinary jokes or puns.
I think he had visits from Emily Dickinson, too, at times at Walden. He kept in touch with a lot of his friends.
A lot of famous people did visit him there,
yes.
And his place, his little house there, becomes a kind of focus for intellectuals generally.
Yeah, I think of him as an equivalent of all the other eccentrics like Norbert Wiener at MIT or Einstein or others who were.
The image I took away from Barksdale Maynard's book was the Alcott children all swimming and playing in Walden Pond there when they were little women.
That's right. What an image that is to see Louisa May Alcott swimming in the pond with Thoreau perhaps prowling around the banks looking for wildflowers. What a gathering of great intellects in one place.
Dorothy, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, let's leave with this quote from Walden. "I wanted to live deep and suck out all the marrow of life, to live so sturdily and Spartan-like as to put to rout all that was not life, to cut a broad swath and shave close, to drive life into a corner and reduce it to its lowest terms, and if it proved to be mean, why then, to get the whole and genuine meanness of it and publish its meanness to the world, or if it were sublime, to know it by experience and be able to give a true account of it on my next excursion." Now that from Henry David Thoreau's Walden. W. Barksdale Maynard, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
W. Barksdale Maynard is the author of the newly published Walden Pond, A History, and he joined us from Delaware Broadcasting Center in Wilmington, Delaware. When we come back from a short break, the next time the circus comes to town in Denver, Colorado, they have to leave some of the star attractions at home. That and your letters after the break. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.